You got it.
All right. I'm here with Bobby Valentine, 10-year Major League Baseball player, 16-year Major League manager, 7 years managing in Japan. Recently wrote a book coming out on November 30th called Valentine's Way. You wrote it with Peter Golenbach. Bobby, let's start with why now? Why the book now?
Well, a couple of years ago, Peter contacted me and he said, hey, you know, your life's journey seems to be really interesting. And why don't we document it? And I said, absolutely. Why don't we document it? So we got about 50 years in and it was pretty cool.
A couple of things. One, the book is great. I love the book. I love the way it reads. So it's very easy to read. It's like we're sitting next to you at a campfire and we're just talking baseball. And that's exactly how it reads. Is that how it was written? Did you just tell Peter all these stories and he just formatted it?
Exactly. You know, I've never really met Peter in person. It was all over the phone. He would call, you know, once every 4 or 5 days. He'd give me a topic. I'd start to talk about it. And he would transcribe it. He'd put it into words, and we have a book, and it's just talking about what happened.
So once again, the book is Valentine's Way. I just saw it on Amazon. You can pre-order it on November 30th. When you were young and in high school, you were involved in so many activities, not just sports, but you were in clubs, you were acting in plays, you were doing dancing, and you had two girlfriends. Why did you feel like you had to be that busy all the time? I mean, it seems like that's what you've done your whole life, is just busy, busy, busy.
Yeah, it's just part of the DNA. You know, where there's time to fill, I tried to fill it, and you know, all those cool things. My mom said, hey, you can't just be a jock, you have to do something more. So she gave me the choice of singing or dancing lessons. After I sang a note, I realized it was dancing. And I became a ballroom dancer as a kid. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Did any of that ballroom dancing help you with your sports?
Oh, totally. You know, when you're dancing with a partner, you know, there's a routine you have to follow. So there's a lot of teamwork. There's a lot of rhythm. There's a lot of balance. And there's a lot of competition. You know, this is Tuxedos, Waldorf Astoria. Fans up in the balcony, you know, judges walking around with their pens marking down paper. So there's a lot of pressure, and it definitely helped me in sports.
In the book, obviously, you cover all of the most polarizing moments of your career, which we all know from the Mets and the 1 year at the Red Sox and all of that stuff. I'm not going to ask you about any of that because I want everybody to go, I want them to get the book and read about it in more detail about those situations. When you were the fifth pick in the 1968 Major League Baseball draft, you were drafted by the Dodgers. It was done back then where you just got a phone call and they told you what happened. You didn't have a chance to really process. Was it every team except the Dodgers? Is that what you were hoping for?
Well, you know, the Dodgers were my least favorite team. I lost the bet on the Dodgers. When I was 13 years old, they swept my favorite team, the Yankees. So, yeah, I wasn't expecting L.A. as far away from Stamford, Connecticut as you could get. And, yeah, it's luckily, because of Lasorda, it turned out well, and I enjoyed being with the Dodgers.
If you could go back in time to yourself when you started managing at 35 years old, I believe. If you could go back and in a baseball situation, tell yourself, don't spend as much time on this as a manager and spend more time on this. Could you give me a couple of examples of that?
Yeah. You know, when I first managed, I also wanted to be the coach, you know, so I wanted to coach the base running, coach the outfielders, coach the hitting, the bunting, the pitching, the relief pitching. And, you know, I wasn't good at the beginning of delegating things out. So if I had to do it all over again, I'd hire the best in breed, which I eventually did, and let them do the coaching. And I would do the, you know, orchestrating, if you will, the directing of the players, the coaches, the front office, the fans, the whole nine yards. Yeah.
Did you find it difficult to manage players that you once played with? Were you scared?
Oh, I wasn't scared. I enjoyed, you know, I played with Charlie Huff, Tommy Pechorek, Nolan Ryan. I got to manage all those guys when I was young, and they were all older than me at the time, as a matter of fact. But it was a joy managing them because they knew me and I knew them. And the tough part was that I managed them at the end of their career. So, you know, my best friend, my roommate, Tom Pechorek, my first roommate ever, he played his last game in the major leagues for me, and I had to release him. So that was tough, that's for sure.
Absolutely. The 1 year you managed in Boston, there was a story that came out how you were late to a game. That was it. That was the story that came out, is you were late to a game. Do you think that journalists and the media kind of baited you because you are honest? You are honest to a fault, and you don't spread a lot of just empty things about it and just keep rambling. You're very matter of fact with your honesty. Do you think that you got baited like by them media types?
Well, you know, I think often they had the story written before the story happened. So they just filled in the blanks, and actually late for my showing up at the ballpark, not late for the game.
Right.
You know, we were having practice before the game. I picked up my son at the airport and got caught in the horrendous San Francisco traffic. What are you going to do? I called ahead. Everything was planned. Yet they made it out to be late. And, I didn't like that one, especially because they put my son right in the middle of it. And he didn't need to be in the middle of that. That's for sure.
In 2005, you won the Japanese championship with the, I'm going to pronounce this so wrong, but you're going to correct me, the Chiba Lotte Marines.
Perfect. Lotte Marines. Yeah.
Lotte Marines. You challenged the Chicago White Sox to a series, which logistically wasn't going to happen. How do you think that series would have went with your club against the White Sox that year? Best of seven.
Well, you know, what I wanted to do is I wanted to meet him in Hawaii halfway. I wanted the proceeds to go to charity. I wanted it to be a world event, you know, which later became that World Baseball Classic, the WBC. And, you know, that year our team was really good, and the White Sox are really good too. But I think we would have given them a run for their money. We were a team of teams, and we were firing all cylinders. If we met them halfway, I think it would have been a glorious event for baseball. The problem is if the U.S. team lost, then how could they ever claim it to be a world championship again?
Right. Well, yes, very much. I wanted to ask you about the Japanese fans. Whenever we see a baseball movie that involves Japan, we always see the fans in the stands are very rabid, very loud. It's a very different scene. Is that an actual portrayal of what the fans are like in Japan?
Yeah, they're very attentive, and there's a cheering section for each team. The entire right field stands for the home team. The entire left field stands for the visiting team. And that's tens of thousands of people. Everyone else sits in the horseshoe, and they watch the game, and they might sing along, but the cheering section actually has a song for every player. They sing it during every at-bat, from the beginning of the at-bat until the end of the at-bat. They stand. They have signs. They have, bugles and horns and flags and the whole nine yards. They kind of encompass our football fandom along with our baseball fandom and along with soccer fandom all into one in that cheering section in the outfield.
You were actually, you mentioned this in your book, you were the first major league player to use a Mizuno glove. What went into that decision?
Mizuno was trying to break into the U.S. market back in 77. They had a Winnebago with Craftsman inside of this Winnebago. They were going to go around to all the spring training camps and try to make gloves for players and, break into the market. The problem was Joe Torre's brother, Frank Torre, was the vice president of Rawlings, and Rawlings didn't want them in the marketplace. And so they weren't allowed on the property of any of the spring training complexes. So as I was riding, as I was riding to spring training on my bike, I was living off the proper area. I passed this Winnebago. I looked inside. There are a bunch of baseball guys, Japanese guys, all making gloves. And I stopped. I talked to them. The next day, I stopped again. I talked to them. They said, why don't we make you a glove? I said, that would be spectacular. And they handcrafted a glove, put my name on it. And, I got to use it in a major league game for the New York Mets, interestingly. And Joe Torre was the manager of the team at the time, which made it even crazier when you think about it.
Once again, the book is Valentine's Way, My Adventurous Life and Times by Bobby Valentine. Bobby, there's so many people you come into contact with that would later become something. At the time you meet them, they're just your friends and people you come across. But you come across, and just to name a few, the future owner of Kinko's, there's a great story in there about an Animal House situation that happens while you're in college. Mike Holmgren's name, I believe, was in the book, and these are scattered all over the place. So once again, it's a great read. You want to get this book. Bobby, you've forgotten more about baseball than any of us know. I feel like at this time. But when I put out your name out there that I was going to get a chance to interview you, other than the more famous things, the fact that you're the inventor of the wrap sandwich came up a lot. Is this the internet getting the best of me, or are you the inventor of the wrap sandwich?
Well, interesting. I guess it's creator. And, when I went up to Boston, that was out on my Wikipedia page, put out there by manager of one of my restaurants. And the Wall Street Journal decided to try to debunk it. And they spent a few months going around and exploring menus from the 80s to see if anyone actually had a wrap sandwich on their menu in the 80s. It turned out they couldn't find a wrap. That's an American sandwich in a tortilla shell, just to clarify, not a burrito or a taco,
right?
But an American sandwich, right? And so they couldn't find a restaurant that had one on the menu earlier than 1981. That's when we had ours on the menu. I happened to be cooking that day that the toaster was broken, and I couldn't put the toast in the bread in the toaster. So I just took the ingredients and rolled it up in a tortilla shell and served it as is. And the rest is history.
Absolutely. What was in it? What was the very first wrap sandwich?
It was a club sandwich. It was a club sandwich rolled up. So the order came in for a club sandwich. I couldn't make it traditionally, so I had the 10-inch tortilla shells there in front of me, and I put the mayonnaise, and I put the, the ham and the turkey and the bacon and the lettuce and the tomato, and rolled it all up. I put a little American cheese on the top of the tortilla to keep the seam from opening up at the time. Didn't quite have the roll down. I put it underneath a salamander, melted the cheese. So then the cheese kept the crease from opening, and it became a hit. We served it as a club Mex, and then underneath it said a club sandwich, Mexican style, rolled in a tortilla shell, and hence the wrap.
Yes. Also, an interesting story you tell in the book is about how you appeared on the dating game, which you'll never see the video for, as you explain in the book. You were on it a couple of times, and I wanted to ask you a question because I wanted to make sure I got the story right. You were a contestant. You lost. The woman picked somebody else, but thought that the reason behind she was picking them was actually your answers to the questions, so she should have been picking you. Is this correct?
Yeah, basically, that's exactly correct. It's three guys behind the curtain, one girl sitting out asking the questions. Oh, number one, number two, number three. And so when the host said, so why did you pick number three? And she says, oh, because of this answer that he gave. And he said, oh, okay, well, you two are going to win a trip to Laguna Beach. after the show, they came over to me and apologized. They said, oh, that was really your answer. We're going to call you back. And so there was a daytime version and a nighttime version of the dating game. I lost that daytime version, which was a trip from L.A. down to Laguna Beach, about 30 miles. And I won a trip on the nighttime version to the Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and The Hague. I didn't take the trip, but I won it.
Yeah, it was a trip to Europe, and I believe the woman ended up going on the trip with her boyfriend. So,
good for her.
Yes, Bobby, how many current locations are there of Bobby V's, the restaurant?
Okay, there's two. There's one in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. One in Stamford, Connecticut. They're part of a Connecticut chain of OTB restaurants, which is off-track betting, and they serve food and bev. I sold my brand and have my brand on both of those restaurants that now have sports betting, interestingly enough, in them, and they're doing quite well.
I wanted to ask you one question about your recent mayoral race in Stamford, Connecticut. And that would be this: in the times where the country is so divided, it seems like you have to have a strong opinion about something one way or another. You have to have it. That's the appearance of things nowadays. You ran as an independent. You put yourself behind the eight ball right away. And what went into that decision of running as an independent?
As it turns out, it was an unaffiliated that I ran on, only because independent is actually a party. I wanted to be unaffiliated from all party structure. And I wanted to be affiliated with all the people. You know, I just wanted to have it be a municipality election, Stamford, Connecticut, hometown. Let's do things the right way and not have to have the party politic get in the way of what would be good governance. And, it's going to be another book for sure, but it was a spectacular 6 months of learning, of an adventure. We got more votes than any non-Democrat ever got in the city of Stamford, and it was quite the learning experience, but we lost. Caroline Simmons won, who is a spectacular candidate, now will be mayor of Stamford, Connecticut, and hopefully she'll do a great job.
In doing my research, I ran across a lot of positive feelings about you when you were the Sacred Heart Athletic Department head. You left that position to run for this race. You thinking about going back?
Well, I'll always be associated with Sacred Heart University. I did 8 years of service there. We did great things. The athletic department went from, maybe 700 to over 1,000. I passed the baton to a wonderful deputy that worked with me for a couple of years, Judy Amricchio, and she's doing a great job right now. And my staff is doing a great job. So I'll always be back. I don't think I'll take that position at the university, but if they need me, I tell them I'm like Continental Breakfast when you check into a hotel. I'm there. If you want it, you don't have to take it.
Once again, the book is Valentine's Way, available on November 30th. It reads really well. I suggest this to everybody who's listening, and everybody who is listening is a baseball fan. So it's a no-brainer for us, really. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you have a lot of things going on. You are very busy. You're probably doing 1,000 interviews. You're going to be so tired of talking to the media all the way up until your book. There is one last thing I would like to do. I got 10 quick questions that just require quick answers to get to know you better.
Oh, boy.
And not non-controversial.
Your man.
Here we go. Bobby Valentine, what was your first car?
Oh, a 1969 Camaro, my favorite car ever.
What was your favorite stadium to either play or coach in?
Wrigley Field was spectacular. First time going there made my day. It was spectacular.
If you could build the perfect hot dog for you, what is it?
wow, it has to have chili, and I think it has to have cheese. I chopped onions, red onions preferably, would probably be the mix.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
Whoa, that might have been Three Dog Night.
There's a reference.
Interestingly enough, it was in L.A., and the center fielder at the time was Willie Davis. He wore number 3. He ran like a greyhound, and they called him the Three Dog, and we went to Three Dog Night concert together.
Do you remember who you got your first hit off of?
You know, I always said it was Don Gullett, but I guess it was Will McEnany.
Okay. What is your preferred adult beverage?
Stella, in a nice Stella glass with a Steph.
You own a lot of sports memorabilia. What's your favorite piece?
Oh, I have a autographed Mickey Mantle photograph where he's whispering in my ear when I was 17 years old at Yankee Stadium, and it's my favorite.
And that story is in the book, and you can find out what Mickey Mantle whispered into Bobby Valentine's ear. Can you name me, in all of your managing, an underrated player that never got the kudos they should have for how good they were?
John Olerud. I think he was spectacular at all facets of the game except for running. He was one of the slower runners I've ever had, but great batter, great fielder, great person, most underrated.
And last question, what's the best item on the menu at your restaurant?
Wow, I don't think you could, You know, in my old restaurant, it was always my mom's eggplant parmesan. We don't have that in the restaurant. So I'm going to say you probably have to go with the salmon on the dinner entry. It's really good.
You can't go wrong with salmon. Bobby, hey, one last question before I let you out of here. When you got injured, that story also obviously in the book that really played a part in your career ending at some point. Have you recovered 100% from that leg injury?
Oh, no. You know, my leg's still crooked. My ankle doesn't bend. You know, it's a balancing act, and I've learned to do it over the last 50 years. But I guess I've recovered, but it's not a normal leg, that's for sure.
Bobby, thank you for being on the show. When you go through the book, you read about your philanthropy. It's amazing. You've led an incredible life. You were one of the more polarizing figures when I was growing up. So I knew all the main stuff about you. I didn't know any of the other stuff about you. It was great to have you on the show, and it was great to be able to talk to you about some things. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, the only thing I could say, you're a pro's pro. Great interview, and I appreciate being with you. Thank you much.
I appreciate that, Bobby. Take care of yourself.
Great job. Thank you.